really important before we get the recorder started.
Okay.
My name is Lorraine, and I am a compulsive overeater. I came into program in July of 1986. In my first year, I lost 125 pounds, and I've kept it off since. And that is nothing that I can claim as my victory. It is all a part of joining this program, working the steps, being an active part of the fellowship, following suggestions, and doing what people did who had what I wanted. And there it is. That's it. That's the sum. That's the miracle. But it's not how I would have described this program when I first came in, because as far as I was concerned, I bought my wedding gown. I'm from New York. I bought my wedding gown in the Bowery. I knew what people looked like who worked 12 steps. They were nothing like me. They were losers. They had no place to live. They drank out of paper bags. So I was not open when my therapist suggested that maybe I come to Overeaters Anonymous. I was not at all impressed with that, and I wasn't at all interested. But why did she even suggest it? Because my life was a mess. I struggled and fought and clawed and hoped and imagined a life, and it never worked out. Never worked out. I went to a lot of different grammar schools, and when I was young, and every time I went to a new school, this one was going to be different. I was going to be popular, I was going to have a lot of friends, they were going to invite me to birthday parties, I was going to be on the team, just, you know, the teacher would choose me as the pet, I would get all A's on my report card. The expectations matched the expectations of my family. My job was to excel. My job was to be constantly aware of what the neighbors would think. That's how I saw life. That there was this goal, and I was supposed to meet it. And I never did. I just never did. So I also never was really a normal weight. I went through all the stages, all the stages. I was solid as an ox. I had big bones. I was chunky. I was chubby. Do people in department stores think that a child enjoys going to the Chubette department? Do you know what the clothes look like in the Chubette department? They look like my grandmother's house dress. I wanted ruffles. I wanted gathers. I wanted velvet. I wanted big bows, bright colors. We shopped in the Chubette department. And then I was too big for the Chubette department, so then we had a shop in more of the Mrs. department or the Juniors department, which was not appropriate at all because they were too old for me. So there was this whole thing of never being right, never quite measuring up. And the weight was so obvious. I wore my problem wherever I went. So then I got to the point where my mother thought that the weight was more of an issue than not an issue, so we went to the doctor, and the doctor gave her pills for me to take. because they were going to reduce my appetite. So when I went back after a month, he took me off the pills because I was taking the pills and still eating the same, because what was not recognized was being full had absolutely nothing to do with how much I ate. That was not part of who I was. So now the doctor, an official, an authority, gave up on me. 1 month. Oh no, no more pills for you. And it was like my fault that his pills didn't work. We get to the long part. I put on weight. Now I'm in New York, I'm working. I'm so busy. I am so interested in dating that I'm not hungry. It is great. I lose weight. I meet a man that I absolutely adored. And we get married. Well, he married a normal-sized woman. I also wanted a lot of children. So I had 6 children. I always said, I want 6 children. He was an only child. He didn't quite grasp that. He liked being an only child. I wanted 6 children. So we had 6 children, and he was like appalled. But we managed. But every time I had a child, I got bigger and bigger. So then became serious dieting. I'm not even going to go. Everybody knows. Metrical, AIDS, the Air Force diet, Weight Watchers, so many times I think they bronzed the car because I was always back there, always back. Diet Center, I remember going, it was either Diet Center or Diet Control, where just before Valentine's Day, the moderator passed around this beautiful heart-shaped box for each of us to look at for Valentine's Day. And when you opened it up, it was a pound of fat, because we would be the people who would eat all that, and she wanted us to see. Well, that was not a great message, because of course, I did get a smaller version of the red box, and I ate the whole thing before Valentine's Day was over, because it was there. So that didn't work. Back to weight. OptiFast, perfect. OptiFast was the one program I did fantastic on, because there was no food. I went to restaurants and diners with this stuff. When you mixed it with water, it never came off the glass. I mean, it was like concrete in this glass. And of course, it wasn't quite good enough. So then I would go to the store and I would buy sugar-free syrups. So I went to restaurants everywhere with a bottle of sugar-free syrup and a packet of this powder, and I would always say, like Saint Lorraine, I'll just take a glass of water, please. And then they'd look at this mess on the table. But I was holy, and I took off weight. I was a star, finally. I walked into the doctor's office for all my checkups, and they beamed. I was their poster child. They were going to take my picture and put it on the wall until he said, from now on, when you come, the next person I want you to see is just go to the office of the nutritionist. I'm graduating. I went into the nutritionist, and she said that for 1 meal a day, I could have a bowl of lettuce this big. Anybody question what happened next? I don't know whether it was the first meal, the fourth meal, But I'm looking at this lettuce. It needs something. And then it started. I'll have a little of this, a little of that. And the next thing you know, the lettuce is a meal. I'm still supposed to be, which I am, I'm drinking this stuff, but I'm eating lettuce. So, of course, I go back and I've gained weight, a lot of weight. So I don't go back anymore. I am not the poster child anymore. And I have no clue why. That's the part that could make me cry now when I think of that woman. Why? Because when I left that office, I knew I had failed again. And I didn't know why. Because I loved being the star. I loved the attention I got. I loved being successful. And now I wasn't. And it made me feel terrible. And where this all came, I go to my therapist because in my life, things were going wrong. Really, really wrong. My husband wanted out. I had a child who was an active alcoholic, another one who made suicide gestures and attempts. This marvelous life that I had imagined, that I had expected, is falling apart at my feet. I am a failure on all levels. So I start at this therapist, and she suggests that maybe I should try Overeaters Anonymous to at least work on the weight issue. The eating issue. Overeaters Anonymous? You mean like the drunks? Yeah, like the drunks. Why don't you try it? Don't start already. Just try it. So I do. It was memorable. It was summer. Now, you have to picture, I am a 260-pound woman. Do I wear shorts? No. I wear slacks. In the winter, I wear navy blue and black. And in the summer, I wear white. And they have elastic waist, and I buy them at JCPenney. And I wear tops that have short sleeves in the summer. And they have stripes that go up and down because no one should know that I am fat. So I get out of the car. It's at a church in Livingston. It is July or August. It's beastly hot. I'm sweating because I'm overweight. And I go in, and I go downstairs, and I don't see any signs for Overeaters Anonymous meeting, but I hear a whole bunch of people. So I go to this big room. I'm just focused on finding this meeting and getting it done so I can tell my therapist I went. And there's this man standing there, and I said, "Excuse me, is this the Overeaters Anonymous meeting?" "No, lady, it's bingo." And he said, he hollers out, "Harry, the lady's looking for the Overeaters Anonymous meeting." Oh, dear. All right, no, ladies, down the hall. Okay. I go down the hall. It's a nursery classroom. Nobody's there. That's good. That's really good, because now I'm late. I had this whole interlude. I'm late. And sure enough, a woman shows up. And I said, "Oh, all right, I'll come back." She said, no, she said. "It only takes two people to have a meeting." I'm not happy. We go in the room, she brings out this box of materials, and she said, "Sit. I'm looking at this chair. It's plastic. It's like 4 inches off the floor." I sit. I mean, I'm the person that was raised to go by what other people think. Do I want to argue with this woman? No. I sit on the chair. She goes through the entire meeting. Oh, she talks about sponsorship, how I should get a sponsor, talks about abstinence, talks about telephone calls. All I'm thinking about is how I'm going to get to the parking lot. I'm going to have to crawl and then hoist myself up on the handle of my car because I'm not going to be able to stand up from 3 inches off the floor. And I did. I had to sidle around on my knees to kind of build myself up off that chair. So she says to me, you know what you have to do? You have to go to this meeting in this other town because they have a lot of people who are willing to be sponsors. And this whole time, I am smiling at this woman saying, yes, yes, I'm nodding. Thank you, thank you. Inside, I'm like, I need to go home. So I go back to the therapist, and I tell her, I have been to the only OA meeting I'm ever going to. Oh, she said, I am so surprised. So a year goes by, and I'm still gaining weight. I didn't stay the same. She says, you know, I really think you might want to go to another OA meeting. Maybe try that one. Well, isn't it interesting? I remembered where she said that other meeting was. Talk about a spiritual experience, a spiritual growth. So I said, all right, I'll go. So I go to this meeting, and it's huge. I'm not the only one there, and it's big, and we're all around. There must have been like 40, 50 people. Can I tell you, this was the largest group of crazy people I had ever encountered. They can't wait to raise their hand, disclose horrible things about themselves, talk about the sponsor they love and talk to every day, and how they only have 3 meals a day with nothing in between, and they love it. And they can't wait to hug each other. No. This is not going to work for me. I am so glad you people are happy, but I go back to the therapist and I say, okay, so I went. I went, and I'm not going back. So, well, why aren't you going back? They're really, you know those people at the airport that hand out flowers? I said, these are the people that are not eating food. And they want you to think they're happy, and they're trying to suck you in. And they got this sponsorship thing where they know all your secrets. I'm not going. A year later. Now my diagnosis at my doctor's is morbidly obese. I'm not just chubby, chunky, large bone, fat, or obese. Now I'm morbidly obese on blood pressure medication. And she said, I really think that you might want to try Overeaters Anonymous one more time. Why would you think that? And she said, because you talk about food the way alcoholics talk about alcohol and getting their next drink. Well, she mentioned this several times, and finally, to shut her up, I said, all right, can we make a deal? I'm going this one time, and then that's it. I don't ever want to hear you mention me going to that group again. She said, it's a deal. So I go back to the same meeting, and the same crazies are there. And they're still whatever abstinent is, and they still reveal everything in their life to their sponsor, and they're having a great time. And I stayed. This time I stayed. And I don't know why I stayed, but I had a couple of reasons of why I agreed to go back. And one of them was our first child got married in April. And I love to dance. I just, the music, I feel music, and my whole body responds to it. And I had bought this fabulous dress as mother of the groom. It was the biggest size they had. And when I went back for the fitting, can I tell you, they had to let it out. And now we're at this reception. They had picked out songs that were my favorite. And I was out of breath. And my legs hurt. My knees hurt. I was sweating. I couldn't do the dance. I sat most of the reception. And it was so hard to feel that music and to have my body unable to respond. And that June, my husband left. So I was open to something. So when I came in, I think I was at what they refer to in program as having hit my bottom. But I wasn't even aware of that. I was like some dumb animal that just moved on instinct to go someplace safe. And that's how I came in. I had a feeling of failure and hopelessness, and I had not any thought at all, no expectation, that this was a way that I could go. And that's not how it turned out. That was my first personal step into recovery. Is putting myself in a place where I could hear what I needed to hear. And what did I hear? I heard, put down the food, the rest will follow. I heard the woman I mentioned last night say she lost 100 pounds over a year ago, put the same clothes on she wore last year. I heard people talking about food the way I felt about food. The next thing that happened, and this will be the last thing from my first meeting, is they said, get a sponsor. Well, first of all, I don't want a sponsor. I'm very private. We didn't tell the neighbors anything. Where we lived, what went on in the family, didn't go outside the family. So I wasn't going to have a sponsor. But they said, you know, you really should get a sponsor. And I looked around. There were a couple really cool people. And I thought, all right, maybe a cool person. I would pick a cool person. None of them were available. Well, okay, I'm sorry. So here I am, 260 pounds in my summer attire, and I'm sidling out. It was in a library, and I go out the front door, and as I get to the top of the stairs, I hear this voice behind me saying, "Hello," and I turn around, and it's this nondescript woman who is sitting next to me. Not cool at all. And I smile, and she said, she comes up to me, and she says, "Did you get a sponsor?" And I said, no, but that's okay. I'll come back next week. Oh, would you like me to be your sponsor? What? I mean, this is who I was. The outside person, the facade, and the inside person. The inside person is screaming, hell no. And the outside person smiles and said, yes, thank you. So we sit down on the steps, and she wants to know if I've ever had a weight loss program that worked for me. And I said, well, you know, I've done Weight Watchers a few times. So we go over that, and she says, okay, fine, we get this, we're done. I'm humiliated because I'm sitting on the steps of a public building, and people are walking by, probably wanting to know what I'm talking about, and I'm talking about food to this perfect stranger. So we get through the whole thing, and we work on a food plan of I'm going to follow, which I'm not, but I'm agreeing to it. It's not enough food. I could eat all of that for breakfast. And, you know, we get all done, and she says, all right. She says, I'll tell you what. If you decide you're going to do this, you call me. It's your choice. But if you're not going to do it, then don't call. Well, that's a poor attitude. What's about sponsorship and best friends? Okay, all right, no, that's good. All right, so, okay, fine. I'll start this on Monday. Oh, no. Today. Tell me what you're going to eat today. Today's Saturday. I'm not starting this on Saturday. Monday, I'm going to start. Well, do you have this in the house for lunch? Oh, yeah. I think the inside me is starting to show just a little. This was my first recognized resentment coming up. So we get through lunch and dinner, which I have no intention of doing, but I'm nodding. Finally, she says to me, well, you need my phone number. Oh, right, let me write that down. All right, so tomorrow, then she repeated, if you choose to follow this, you call me at this time and give me your plan for the day in weighed and measured amounts. Certainly. There was smoke coming out of that car going home. I was furious at this woman. How dare she put me in this uncomfortable position and make me act like I was going to do this. Now, can I tell you, I followed that plan. And I can say possibly the word choice tapped right into my pride. I'll show her. But I think beyond that, I think that was the spiritual experience. Somebody reaching out to someone lost, feeling hopeless, feeling like a failure, and being willing to offer service. And she turned out to be the perfect sponsor for me for the time she was available to me. Because she didn't give me impossible rules or regulations. She just told me it was doable. She gave me guidance on the first buffet I ever went to. I follow it to this day. She gave me advice on how to handle a wedding, and I did it. Now I'm back. I didn't go to the happy hour or the cocktail hour. I went shopping if there was a store nearby, which was my second addiction. And that was fine because she told me they always know when dinners will be served. So when it says here, we start working the steps. The step one for me is the foundation of my program. Because based on what I heard in that meeting and meetings I went to, conventions I went to, workshops, days like this, weekends like this, what I heard is people talking about how they thought about food, how they felt about food, what they did with food, how they misused food, how they abused food, how it affected their relationships, how it affected their outlook, it was my classroom. This is my classroom. And when everyone in the fellowship shared something about himself or herself, I found out about me. Because the doctors and my family and my friends and my teachers and my coworkers and my neighbors, they did not know. that I was a compulsive overeater and that this was something that I could learn to be and not compulsively overeat. I only knew that here. That's the first place for the message. And that was the beginning of my growth. Has life been great since I came in? Was abstinence the answer? Was going to the meetings the answer? Was having a sponsor the answer? Not for me. Not for me. I needed more. Because what I heard in these rooms was someone stood up and said, oh, I went to this meeting. It's lovely. It's a step meeting. A step meeting. Oh, yes, we have a new book, Steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Well, I didn't want to not be A in the class, so I had to go get this book, and then I had to find that meeting. And it blew me away because people in this meeting were talking about coming out of rehab. I never heard of rehab. In rehab, they had gone through this step work in detail. Now, the meeting that I went to, we read the steps. In the step meeting, they went through chapter and verse. And where it said this and that, oh, I had this experience. They brought every part of that OA 12 and 12 into my life. I didn't just know that we did an inventory. I learned about how it affected people, that it wasn't as terrifying as it sounded, because people talked about doing a detailed inventory, either according to our OA step book or with the columns from the big book, and how it freed them, how it brought them farther along in recovery, how it strengthened their recovery, how it took them beyond being abstinent, putting the food down, having a sponsor. So I got step one. Step two was tough. Power greater than myself restoring me to sanity. Step three was a spiritual awakening that was powerful and painful. I was asked if I would lead a workshop on a day of Unity Day or Day of Recovery or something. And I, oh, sure, no problem. Give service when you're asked. And then I'm given the title that the higher power in step three does not have to be God. Fine, because I've got an argument with God anyhow. See these walls? God was someplace in a crypt behind there. Because every time I tried to be perfect, then I wasn't, and, you know, there was that judgment. So, you know what? I had kind of a parting of the ways. Look, God, I know you're there and it's fine, but do me a favor, don't interfere. I'll take care of stuff, which was a really poor job. So now I'm leading this workshop and it's right up my alley, you know? So I go to the workshop. I found out the day I walked in, that's when I got the workshop. So I go to the workshop and everything I tried to say was wrong. I could not find any kind of an experience or a thought or an opinion or a belief or a fact that backed up the whole point of this workshop. The more I talked about higher power not being God, the harder I had the time. It just didn't ring true. Didn't ring true. Didn't ring true. And it pissed me off. I was so angry. It was the worst workshop anybody could have attended. It made no sense, had no point. The topic was never justified. And I left there feeling that I had been really bamboozled. And what it turned out to be was, in a difficulty, there's a turning point. There's a gift. For today, it says, there are gifts in adversity. And there was a gift. I had to come smack up against the fact that I did believe that in my life, my higher power was God. Whether I was angry with him or not, you know, there was no denying what I believed. And it was from that that more willingness came into my recovery. We had someone in our meeting who always talked about the third step prayer. Well, I had to buy a big book, and I had to search through. Heaven forbid I should go to this woman and ask her what page. Oh, no. Independent. I can do this without anybody knowing it. So I leaf through the book, and I finally find this prayer. And she had mentioned that she said it every day. I thought, all right, I'll do that. I didn't want to. I didn't believe it. I didn't like it. But I sat on the edge of my bed, and I read the prayer. I could finally read the prayer. And then there was someone at the meeting who came from another fellowship, and his sponsor told him, put your shoes under the bed, because every morning you have to get down on your knees and get them. And that bothered me. That bothered me. My faith tradition is getting down on your knees, and I wasn't doing that. I wasn't doing that till that night when I got down on my knees and I read the third step prayer with a lot of resentment, a lot of anger, but I did it. It's those kinds of, I want to say, just spiritual awakenings that come into my life that make me uncomfortable, that allow me the willingness to do it even if I don't want to. And I think it comes from me not wanting a sponsor, not wanting to be abstinent, and doing it even though I hated it, I didn't want it, but doing it and finding out where the gift was at the end. And that's why I did the third step prayer, and that's why I got down on my knees. And that's why eventually people talking about the fourth step, I'm not doing that. I'm not, because I know what comes next. I'm not doing that fourth step and then talking about it. Until I went on a weekend retreat, I don't know if anybody's been there, but it was Aldersgate when they had that in the fall. And there was a woman leading a workshop, and she was from Florida, and everybody was so happy to see her, House Florida. And she said, oh, she said, what are you doing here? She said, I came up because I stepped up step sponsors. And I was interested. So I went to her afterwards, and I said, who are the step sponsors? So she pointed out, well, one of them I knew, so I wasn't going to her. So I wanted to go to this other and talk about going through the steps with a sponsor, which I'd not heard of. So every time after these workshops and at meals and whatever, I'd go up and she'd be talking to somebody. So finally, it's almost the end of the weekend. I got everything packed, ready to go home, and I walk out, go try once more, and there's the other person. And nobody's around. So I go over and say, she said, I'll be your step sponsor. I'm not happy. Not the person. You know, I don't learn. I just don't learn. But what I have learned is, just because I don't like it, just because I'm afraid, just because I'm angry, doesn't mean it's the wrong thing. Can I tell you, she was the one step sponsor that would have got me through all the steps, including the fourth and the fifth and the sixth and on and on. We started, I was smiling yesterday because it took me four different times to give away my fourth step because it was like 100 questions. And every time we got together, we said the serenity prayer, and then we said, be still and know I am God. And she offered me the service of hearing my step, of not disagreeing, not agreeing, not condoning, not being surprised, just giving service with love. So I got through all that. I recognize the sixth step. I wanted my defects just sort of taken away, or maybe altered a little, so that they weren't qualifying as defects, but they still were a little comfortable. Yeah, just could we, you know, I still wanted it in a little softer way. But what I recognize now, I know people talk about fear, and that is one of my defects. And I can find a lot of reasons why I can feel fear, and I'm okay with it. I don't know how to set fear aside. I don't. It's a feeling. I received a phone call in May from the social worker where I live. And she called to tell me that this man that I adored had died. And the fear was overwhelming, and the grief. My best friend had died and left me. And I was totally unprepared. I'm okay with the fear of being by myself, of making decisions that affect my future. I'm all right with that, because what I've learned through all of these steps and my experience is, if I have trust that I've gained in this program, if I have faith that I've returned to, I will be given what I need. And sometimes it's patience, sometimes it's courage, sometimes it's a sense of humor, sometimes who knows what it is, but I believe I will receive it. No matter how afraid I am, no matter how angry I feel, no matter how discouraged I am. And that's what this program gives me. It gives me hope. It took away the hopelessness. It took away the sense of failure. Actually, it altered failure, because now I recognize I can do things wrong. Steps tell me to make amends. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I remember my first time. I had a boss. I don't even remember what it was, but man, I blew it. And I knew I blew it. My past behavior before program was to find justification for this. So-and-so didn't tell me, I didn't know, and then I thought, and see, it's not my fault. Program taught me, I had a role in this. Where's that? The fourth step. I had a role, and my role was, I blew it. Sure enough, she calls me in, it's coming, it's coming. And I just went over. I had a role in this, I had a role in this, serenity. And she said this, and this, and this, and this. And unbelievable, I opened my mouth and I said, you're right. It's a wonder fireworks didn't go off. That was probably the first time in my life I had ever admitted that I had done something inappropriate and it was totally my fault. There was not an army behind me that shared responsibility. All of this is part of the spiritual growth I've had in this program. This man that I loved, I remember going back many times in programs saying, look, can we do a do-over on this, because I didn't get that right. Or even proactive, I would go to him and I'd say, look, we need to talk about this. Could you do me a favor? Don't look in my face and don't pay any attention to the tone of voice, because I'm not going to be able to get this across the way I truly mean it. That's spiritual growth. That's knowing who I am. It's also knowing who's responsible. I did not have this growth by myself. I did not develop it. I didn't create it. I didn't even ask for it. It all came because I came into Overeaters Anonymous and I heard me in the rooms and I heard that there was a solution and that if I worked the steps, the result would be growth, spiritual growth. Everything else would take care of itself. So where am I today? I am at a point in my life I never thought I would be. My family all left by the time they were 80. I'm very close. My husband's family lived to their middle and late 90s. He happened to have Parkinson's, which was pretty mild. And so we ended up selling our home of 48 years, downsizing into an apartment, because I wanted him taken care of. I wanted him to be in a place where there was assisted living and a nursing home as this disease progressed into his 90s, because I was out of here. The old me would never have considered this, because my first impression when I walked in is, oh my God, these people are so old. I would not have chosen where we were. But what I've learned in program is it's service for others. It's learning how to not only feel the emotion at the time, but to experience the maturity of love for others and to act on it. And more than anything, I wanted him to be safe and cared for. Well, God has a sense of humor. And the only thing I can think is maybe it's me that's going to need assisted living and a nursing home. And I'm okay with that. I am where I am because I did a lot of praying, a lot of turning over. And I've come to understand that on those first days in those meetings, when people mentioned the word surrender, which was abhorrent to me, because surrender meant defeat, failure, less than. Somebody won and I lost. And what I've learned with working the steps and following what other people did that was successful is surrender leads to victory. All of it is about working through pain, working through disappointment, working through not having instant gratification, working through defects to get what's great. And what's really great is that serenity that comes, that knowing that as long as I stand on step one, as long as I recognize who I am, I'm Lorraine, I have blue eyes, and I'm a compulsive overeater, I will always be here. And I always want to learn from the wisdom of the rooms. Thank you all.